It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 291. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. If you haven't visited the main website, if this is your first time you're hearing the show, please take a moment, go over to miketechshow.com and check out the site. You'll also find links to the wiki, where that's mtswiki.com, and that's how you can get all of the archives of all of the past shows. Also, you can email me any question or suggestion. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have two voicemails tonight that are tremendous. Can't wait to play them. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. And that's important for this weekend because I have some consulting scheduled for Saturday. My Twitter account is just twitter.com/MikeTechShow. If I'm going to be snowed in, which it seems like the Northeast we are going to get dumped on, and it could be a significant accumulation of snow. And if that's the case from Friday night into Saturday, and that means my consulting will be canceled, and I'm going to be available, snowed in, and I will do another show. I have so much email I want to catch up on that I'm not going to be covering email on tonight's show because I have so many other things. So what I'll do on Saturday is I will do that. Now, here's what I will try to do. If there's not enough snow to cancel and I end up consulting on Saturday, I'll do something Sunday afternoon. So we'll call it a Super Bowl pregame tech show, and I will do something in the afternoon on Sunday. There will be a, hopefully all going well, there will be another show this weekend because a lot of the questions are relevant, and I don't want to go too far without answering that. So there, and I have some tremendous emails that were follow-ups to some past shows and some that I just got to get to, and you're going to love it. So with that, let me take care of business and then start on tonight's show. GoToMeeting, the best online meeting service that you can use. You have one flat rate per month where you can hold unlimited meetings. Everybody goes to GoToMeeting.com and they just a simple click and they join the meeting. You can have multiple presenters. You can show your screen to everybody in the meeting. You can hand off between presenters, highlight things that you want to show. You can run video presentations, actually run programs. I've done presentations where I've executed different utilities and programs on GoToMeeting. It's a phenomenal program. Please take a moment and you can get a 30-day free trial at gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast for your free 30-day trial. A couple important things happening that will impact the miketechshow.com website. Blogger is stopping the ability to do FTP updates. Now, what does that mean? I have been using Blogger for now almost 5 years. When I go into Blogger and make my post, it does an FTP update to my website, which is hosted at Brinkster. When they take that ability away, I will no longer be able to blog. So I won't be able to post my site, my show. I won't. They are taking this away because they say the FTP users only represent 0.5% of all the bloggers. That's because that half a percent will, they use their own hosting site, which is unusual. And it's how I have my whole setup at MikeTechShow.com. So what this does is kicks me in the butt and forces me to go WordPress, which is what I've wanted to do anyway. So I've been waiting for that one thing to push me over the edge and get me into WordPress. That's it. Jay just asked, why aren't I using WordPress? Because you know what? WordPress was not as good 5 years ago. And it was very difficult to use. And Blogger was simple and it was right in front of me. Now, this is where I'm going to need some help. I've been investigating converting from Blogger to WordPress. If anybody, they're saying it imports it easily, and that's what I'm hoping. I am actually going to set up a test website that I'm going to do a test migration and see how that goes, and then get ready for a cutover and make the change. Ultimately, I'll probably be changing hosting providers, which will save me money. Actually, it's going to save me a lot of money. And it's going to get me to WordPress. Keeping my fingers crossed, I have a March 22nd absolute firm deadline from Blogger, and I will go on my way and make this happen. If you can offer up, I'll figure out something that we can trade. If you have experience in doing a conversion from Blogger to WordPress, please email me, MikeTechShow@gmail.com, and I could definitely use the help. Any advice, or if you have some tips or recommendations, migration tools, anything that you can do, please email me with that and I will take it all in and I will put a project plan together, because that's what I do when I embark upon something like this, and I will make sure that the conversion happens. And all this is happening right upon my 5th year anniversary of podcasting, which is the first week of March. And what I hope to do is have a show that I'm going to have some pretty cool prizes, of which a listener has already sent in some prizes that are very, very good. I'll add a couple. We'll have 4 or 5 gifts, and I will figure out a way to give them out on that show and get them out to you right away. It should be a lot of fun, and look for some more announcements as we get closer to that. Looking forward to celebrating my 5th year anniversary. If you want to follow what's going on about this Blogger issue, the website that Google's using to blog about this is blogger-ftp.blogspot.com. That's the URL. A device I want to talk about: extending your USB over Cat 5. That's right. Taking USB, which has a limit of only 15 feet to be able to extend it. That's why when you go look for extending USB and getting that extension cable, the longest cable is 15 feet. The company, they are not a sponsor, that I use to buy all my cables and the adapters that they sell, it's MonoPrice, MonoPrice.com. You will thank me for recommending this site. It is the best site. Quality cables, very inexpensive. Let's say now you want to extend that USB connection, and you can extend it up to 150 feet. Adapter is just called USB extender over Cat5e or Cat6. It's $13.39 for one of them, and it's two little adapters that one will plug into the USB port, and the other end is just a simple Cat5 connection. Then you have the other adapter that you connect the other end of the Cat5, and you have a female connection for the USB, so you can plug your USB device in it. I have been demonstrating tonight one of my Microsoft cameras. I have connected via a 50-foot Cat5 cable, and it's working fine. Now, it's a low-quality camera, so the quality of it, and it's so far away, I have it at the other end of the room, so it doesn't look that great, but just because of the distance and the camera I'm using, but 50 feet, and I've done it by just 1339. So you're saying, well, geez, Mike, how much is a 50-foot cable? Well, if you go to MonoPrice and take a look at their prices, a 50-foot cable at any color that you want is only $4.57. And guess what? They do not kill you on shipping. This is where I buy all my cables. This is for everyone, but in particular, if you are consulting, you have clients, and you want to make money, and we're saying not ripping your client off, but giving him good value, a good product at a good price, and you can still make money, check out these prices. 20-foot cable for $2.16. I keep all of these cables in a bag in my trunk to make sure that there's no, I always have a cable. I keep all of the USB cables, all of the adapters. If I have a client that needs a 10-foot cable, or let's say even this 20-foot cable, I will charge $1 a foot. So you're looking at $2.16, but they're not going to find it at that. If they were trying to buy a 20-foot cable, they're going to spend $30. I'm going to charge them $20. You don't make a lot of money, but it's a this is a great commodity item that you can mark up because this is such a great supplier and just a great price. So all of these adapters, take a look at this. This is what you should be stocking your bag with the different cables at different lengths. And, you know, someone in the chat says they love crimping. I hate crimping. I never want to make a cable. The chances of you doing something wrong and having that cable go bad, the cables here are too cheap. They're just too cheap. I hate it so much in making a cable that I absolutely use this for buying all my cables, and it makes it easy. And today at my client, I would not believe someone needed a 15-foot USB extension cable, and I had it right in my bag, and it was right here, and I just gave it to him because that's only a couple dollars. And these are the things that make a great impression by having these things and having it quickly and being able to offer that at your client. Hey, if you don't want to mark it up, don't mark it up. But you can pass on a great price to whoever you're selling this to or giving it to. I think this is the site that you mark down, bookmark it. They have been very reliable. I have been buying from them for a while. All of my optical cables, any kind of cable I've been using for my audio video systems here, whether USB, Cat 5, Cat 6, this is it. I've mentioned them in the past, never like this, but since they had such a great adapter here for enabling me to extend the USB, I said, let me check this out, because I said, what a great thing to demonstrate on the show and show you and give you ideas on how you can extend your USB. Now, remember, Cat 5 can only go 300 feet. We're going to talk about that later because we actually have a question that is actually going to come up. So hold that thought. Let me go on to a voicemail that was left to me by Linux Man. And it was... He was recording the voicemail last week while I was doing my show. And what happened is I could hear myself in the background, and it made for a very difficult audio that I can't play. So I did get the gist of his questions. So here they are, and very simple. And he says, Mike, what do you prefer for your Linux? What distributions do I prefer? When it comes to Linux for the desktop, I like Ubuntu. That's what I think is the easiest distribution to work with. I enjoy working with it because it just has so many the drivers are so complete. It's so easy to get installed and to run that to get Linux desktop up and running, that's the way to go, Ubuntu. When it comes to a server, I have a different opinion on that. And I often recommend and like Debian. You know, for a server, you want, you know, HelpTech Online recommends CentOS. A lot of hosting providers use CentOS. I actually worked with my son Ryan on that when he was involved with hosting. He was playing with CentOS, and that's where I actually learned that from. Debian is a very good, solid Linux server operating system. One of the things with Linux, during the day, well, my biggest client actually has several Linux servers in production. We have a Linux person on staff. They do other support things also, and we also have the support of a local company that does Linux support, because we do have our web servers, our Linux that we host ourselves, and there's a couple other critical systems that are running Linux. So I manage a Linux environment, but I don't have the day-to-day hands-on experience with it. I manage it from a higher level, so I don't get involved in the day-to-day commands. But I know I'm going off on answering that question. The next question from Linux Man was, do I prefer Windows, Mac, or Linux? And that's simple. I am predominantly a Windows user. I really like Windows 7, but as most of you know, I use a Mac. I have an iMac right beside me, and I use that for all the podcast audio. When you hear the music at the beginning or the end of the show, when you hear the voicemails that I play, that's coming from my iMac that is patched into my mixer. So I have a Mac, and then for fun, I do play with Ubuntu Linux at home. I have all the operating systems, but I'm predominantly at the core a Windows user. So hope that answers your question. All right, I have a Windows 7 tip, and this is a Windows management tip. So here we go. By now, you've probably seen that Windows 7 does a lot to make window management easier. You can dock a window to the left or right half of the screen by simply dragging it to the edge. Similarly, you can drag the window to the top of the screen to maximize it, and double-click the window's top-bottom border to maximize it vertically with the same horizontal width. What you might not know is that all of these actions are available with keyboard shortcuts. And that's the Windows key left arrow and Windows key right arrow, Windows up arrow, and Windows plus the down arrow maximizes and restores and minimizes. The Windows shift up arrow, Windows shift down arrow maximizes and restores the vertical size. When you go left arrow, right arrow, you dock the window, left or right, and then you can use it in combination with the up and down arrow, and then shift up and down. Here's an additional tip, multi-monitor Windows management, and I have two monitors, and this is really cool. There's a refinement to the same tip. If you go Windows Shift left arrow or Windows Shift right arrow, you move Windows from one monitor to the other, keeping them in the same relative location to the monitor's top left origin. So going Windows plus Shift plus left arrow, you can go to the left monitor, and the same with the right arrow, you go to the right monitor. I love that because I have two 22-inch Samsung LCD monitors in front of me. Those tips are great when I want to switch Windows going from one monitor to the other. Very, very cool. Give a listen to this voicemail
Hello, Mike Byer Brown here from the city of Pittsburgh. I hope that all is well. I have a couple questions I would like to ask. When it comes to hubs, switches, routers, and repeaters, how often are they used in a centralized network? I know that hubs may not be used that often anymore, but how often are switches used? I think the switches are used to just pass data through because routers are a smart device and each router connection would cause a small bit of lag in the network. Am I thinking about this the correct way? And how often are repeaters used, or how often and when are they used? So those are my questions for this week, Mike. Thanks a lot for everything that you do. Remember, February 14th is going to be coming, so you got to get something nice from Miss Dorothy. I hope you have a good one, brother. I got your back. May God bless.
Thank you, Byer, for that question. And he's right. Valentine's Day is just around the corner. Okay. Repeaters are not used anymore. A repeater used to be used when you have to go further than the limitation of your run. Ethernet, Cat 5, Cat 6 has a limitation of 300 feet. So repeaters are old school. Don't worry about them. Forget about them. Don't spend any time learning about them. Okay. So let's talk about hubs and switches. Hubs, unfortunately, they don't use the term hub anymore, and they really should. It's an unmanaged, unsmart, to use the term, device that helps link computers. So you can use a hub where you can aggregate multiple computers to talk to each other. So it's a way for a couple ports. You plug in the computers, the Cat 5 connections or Cat 6 to this device, and it's a dumb device that will help you have a small network. There's nothing wrong with a hub. It is a way to expand. If you have, you need multiple ports, maybe at a desktop and you only have one line, you can put an inexpensive hub under a desk because maybe someone has a couple computers. And maybe they have a network printer or they have a couple network devices and they only have one network line. That's what a hub, to me, is good for. Now, switches, that's a different story. And it can get complicated real fast. You have managed switches, and you have unmanaged switches. A managed switch has to be given an IP address. And with that IP address, you're usually able to log into the switch and configure it. Now, a lot of times they're given a default IP address or there's special software that you're given that you would install on your computer to help you manage that switch. Switches, we can do a whole show on that. There are so many switches to talk about. Let's talk about the unmanaged switches in small work groups and in your house. These are the switches that Netgear, D-Link, they have what I call a home type switch where you can go from 5 ports all the way up to 24. They're unmanaged, meaning that there's no IP address that's given to that switch. And you can go from 10 megabyte all the way up to gigabit. And basically, the ports are what they call switched, meaning that each port individually, you can connect a computer to it. And basically, that port, when you're connected and you are sending traffic to it, it holds a table of where you want to go. And that table, basically, it manages what they call MAC addresses, which each network card has a MAC address, and it tries to identify which port you want to go out to go to that other MAC address. So if I'm a computer and I'm on one port and I am trying to get to the internet, and the path for that is a port that is connected to a router or another device, it will basically take that and forward it to the other switched port. port. So you can see it gets complicated pretty fast. Now, there are switches that can act as routers, and there are routers that act as switches. A router is very simple. It routes traffic. I know I got to go over the OSI model, and I was hoping I wouldn't have to do that, but I think I'm going to have to. I have no choice. Okay. Physical data, network, transport, session, presentation, application. What I just repeated is the OSI model of how data, how everything is transmitted, and there are seven layers. And one of the things that a switch has the ability of doing things at different layers. Most of the switches that you probably deal with are what they call layer two. And layer two is the data link layer. And that deals with the frame. You're going to have to do a little research here and looking some of this up if I've lost you. And I hope I didn't lose everybody. I wasn't going to go down this path, but a switch that can do layer three, which is the packet and the network layer, you can route traffic. So it can act as a router. A router needs to basically, I'm trying to not use the word bridge, but if I have traffic that's on one network segment, maybe it's one IP address that's 192.168.0.anything, and I got to get to 192.168.10.something. In order to make that transition and route between one network and the other network, you need a router to route that traffic. That's why it's called a router. It's routing traffic from one network to another network. So that's a router. A router that you're familiar with probably in the home is your cable modem or your Fios modem or DSL modem. That routes traffic from the internet, which is one network that your ISP provides, to your home network, which is probably 192.168, either .0 or .1, and it's one flat network. So that device is a router and it routes the traffic. Here's what happens though. It can get pretty complicated in a network, let's say, that has hundreds of networks and all different segments. You may need many routers to be able to route the traffic from one network, which might be one department, over to another. Now, you said, are there delays? Each switch that you have, yes, it is an additional hop, but there won't be delays if it's designed correctly. Most switches, advanced switches, have the ability to have a fast connection to connect one switch to another. Most companies use fiber to interconnect switches. So a properly designed network that's very big, that has multiple switches and multiple layers and multiple segments, if they have designed it correctly and they're using fiber between the switches, so they could be pushing multiple gig connections. You can have a 10 gig connection between those switches. So I could have a 48 port switch all doing gigabit and then maybe connecting them between fiber using a 10 gig connection between two switches. That's not going to cause any delay for anybody, depending on what you're doing with the traffic. You can get really advanced really fast. There are lots of courses, books, and material out there. All I did right now was probably confuse a lot of you, and we just skimmed the surface. I am going to have links to hub, switch, and the OSI model. Red really wants to mess things up by talking about VLANs. It's interesting. I've never taught anyone about this, But I actually deal with this on a daily basis, really daily. I deal with these things, with networking. This is the core of what I do for consulting and what I really enjoy. I've avoided talking about it at that level because I can get pretty advanced pretty fast and lose a lot of people. I might need to do like a special, a separate specialty show on some real serious networking. I could do that. VLANs, which Red so kindly mentioned, is a virtual LAN where here's a great example. Let's say I have credit card machines in a store that's on the same network as my computers. And for PCI compliance, that's what the credit card industry uses for compliance when you take credit cards, says, I got to separate that data, but I only have one switch. Well, I can create a virtual switch inside it, what they call a virtual LAN. And I can assign those ports to be one LAN that have those point of sale systems, and I can create another LAN. And remember, the switch has to be capable of doing this. I could create another LAN, drop the ports that are the regular desktops. Now I have two separate LANs on one switch, and I can make it where they don't even talk to each other. So I can build an independent and secure network within switches that are all shared on the same physical switch, but the traffic would never talk to each other. That is, at a high level, what you can do with a VLAN. And with most robust corporate switches that you would want to use in a corporate environment, in a network, your switches need the ability to be able to do VLANs. Now we're going to... we have definitely just scratched the surface here on networking. So we're going to leave it at that. Please send me your questions on networking. I'm going to need feedback. Did you like what I was just talking about? How far do I go? I want to make everybody happy, but I may have to separate some of these shows and tell you, we're going to call it like maybe a networking 101 and then maybe some advanced networking, where I wouldn't call networking 101 covering VLANs. We would talk VLANs in the advanced networking. Let me know your take on this. See what you started, Buyer. I don't even know if I answered your question. You got to let me know that. So follow up with me. Or did I confuse you? I have something I want to play. Kate, who is a regular contributor, longtime listener to the show, has decided to, she recorded a response to the way I have absolutely kind of discounted and, threw away the netbooks and kind of poo-pooed them and said, you know, why are they even here? They're a fad. They're going to go away. Who needs them? They're a waste of your money. For netbooks. And I've said this several times, and that's my feeling on netbooks. Guess what? Kate uses a netbook, and here is, in defense of netbooks, the counterpoint. Here's a great opposing view.
Hi, Mike. It's Katester. Kate Eels calling from Kelowna up here in British Columbia. You know, you mentioned on the show, or before the show the other night, that you don't get netbooks, and I said, I love my netbook, and you said, why? And then you had to do the show, and we never got to really talk about it because I had to go have dinner or some doggone thing. So I sat down and I formulated a response, and I'd like to share it with you. You can either put it on the Mike Tech show or throw it in the garbage, whatever you like. But here's the thing. I love my netbook. It's an MSI Wind U100. It has 160 gigabyte hard drive. I upped the RAM to 2 gigabytes, and it's got a Atom N270 processor running at a blazing 1.6 gigahertz. It's running Windows XP Home. It's Service Pack 3, and it's red and white. It's got a 10-inch screen, which is bright. The whole thing, including the power brick, weighs next to nothing and takes up little space in a small backpack. It's not big, it's not powerful, it's not state-of-the-art. It's also not heavy, and it's also not very expensive. It does what I need it to do, it does it without complaint, and it does it at a reasonable speed. So while I'd never recommend a netbook like this for someone to use for his or her primary computer, I heartily recommend netbooks to people like me. I take my netbook to customers, I have notes on it, I have manuals on it, I have Evernote on it. If there's a working internet connection, I can easily get what I need. I run Firefox, I have Microsoft Office 2007 Home and Student, I've got a PDF viewer, I can read PDF docs, I can create PDF docs, I can download pictures from my camera or my phone, I can edit them, I can post them, I can put them in Evernote. I have a built-in webcam and a microphone. I can Skype. I can send and receive email on any of my accounts. And I can get to my calendar. Yeah, I carry a smartphone, and I can get my email and my calendar there too. But I can't open multiple browser tabs. I mean, it's just out of the question. It just sucks the life out of the phone. Here in Canada, we pay the highest rates in the civilized world for cell phone service, and I use the term service advisedly. Data packages, stupid expensive. And there's no such thing as unlimited usage. Leaving that aside, the keys on my netbook are nearly full size, and the buttons on my cell phone are tiny. At a customer, if there isn't the working internet connection, I can use my netbook and the tools on it to diagnose the problem. I can go wireless, or I can connect it to a router or even a modem with an Ethernet cable, and I can't do that with a phone. I also heartily recommend notebooks to people like me who write. I write a weekly column. I also blog. I write emails with complicated procedures that I try to make clear, and sometimes I include pictures, because I don't have any sock puppets. And when I have a break between customers, I go to a Starbucks or I go to the cafe downtown that has free Wi-Fi, and I write for 45 minutes or an hour. A lot of the time, I'm writing to deadline, and I can't do that with a smartphone. I could do it with a notebook, the paper kind, but when I write, I fact-check, and I include hyperlinks in the content, and I need... And I've been doing that so long that I find now that I need an internet connection and a keyboard in order to write. Now, I know I could haul a laptop around with me, and I did that for a long time. But my netbook's lighter and smaller and easier. Just easier. When I do the grocery shopping between appointments, I can bring it inside with me. I don't have to worry about it being stolen out of the car. Now, if you compare a netbook to a laptop or to a desktop computer, it won't stack up favorably. It lacks power, lacks size, lacks a big screen, lacks a big hard drive. Sounds kind of awful, unless you have a USB headset or USB speakers. If you compare a netbook to a phone, it won't stack up favorably either. It's too big to fit in your pocket, and it's probably even too big to carry on your belt. Now, you can't make phone calls on it unless you use voice over IP. But let's try looking at it another way, okay? Start by thinking about what your requirements are to get work done in the field, to connect to the internet while you're traveling, or to have your backpack not digging into your shoulders when you're on your bike. If you look first at the requirements and then try to determine what tools are out there to meet those requirements, I think you have to at least consider a netbook to be a tool, in the same way that a laptop or a desktop, a cell phone or a smartphone is a tool. They're all tools. They're just different. So for me, my netbook turns out to be a great little tool. that I can use, you know, in conjunction with my faster, powerful, big screen desktop computer. I use that as my primary computer. I need most of my power at home, where I do the work that requires the power. I need portability in the field, and the netbook is small, it's light, it's a beautiful little tool, and I take it with me. So, is a netbook a solution for you? Apparently not. But I just don't see how it makes sense to write off the whole netbook thing as some sort of ill-conceived fad. You know, netbooks fill a niche right now. Maybe they'll take off at some point, or maybe they won't ever get beyond filling a niche and they'll die out. Maybe the iPad will turn out to be the netbook killer. But netbooks are here now. They're useful to some people for some things. They're affordable, and sometimes they're lovely. So think outside the laptop. Just consider a netbook as a possibility when you look at the tools you need to get the job done. I mean, that's it. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Kate, for that and taking the time to put that together. Very well done. Thank you. Kate has some great points. One, she's in Canada and her data plans and cell phone, definitely it's a different situation. Now, portability, she's got me there. Though I definitely say you can't get more portable than an iPhone. But yes, there are limitations. If you have to write, the iPhone's not a place to write. Write your columns, do something that, you know, whatever you're doing. Here's why I have to have a notebook. One of the things that, you know, Kate mentioned, you got to have the right tool for the job, for where you're going, for your clients. Well, I need to connect to a domain. Therefore, I need the professional version of the operating system. I have to have XP Pro. It has to be Vista Business or Windows 7 Pro, which is on my current notebook. So then I can announce my notebook to the domain. You can't do that with the home version. That means I can never use a netbook with some of my clients. Second, the price is not an issue because I paid $299 for my full laptop. Okay, it was the day after Thanksgiving on Black Friday, but you can do the legwork and find a full laptop that's the same price of a netbook. So it's really a question of size. If the phone can't do it, a netbook, yes, it is smaller. And I do admit my laptop's heavy and, you know, puts a little strain on the shoulder when I'm carrying it back and forth to clients. But I take that effort because I want everything that's on my notebook and I need that full screen. And then I even whip out a portable mouse and plug it in because I hate the track point and the pad on a notebook. I have to have the feel of a real mouse in my hand as I'm moving it. I can't stand those little finger track pointings. I hate them. I whip out my USB mouse, and that makes it even bigger to carry. But Kate makes great points, and yes, that's why there's a market for these. Some people, they have them. But anybody that's using price as the reason, no. Go buy a full notebook. You can get them at the same price. If you need the functionality of, you know, there are limitations. You got to know the limitations of the device that you're trying to use before you make the investment. So you got to look at what you want to do. Now, some people, you know, here's Uncle Al in the chat loves the track point. To me, I just can't stand it. Everybody, you know, I think there is a niche here for netbooks. I just wonder what the future is as you see iPad and those type of devices that will be coming out and what they're going to do to the netbook market in terms of giving you more functionality, even becoming lighter, smaller. I am glad that you're happy with your netbook. It does what you need it to do. That's just like what my iPhone and my notebook does, what I need it. And, you know, everybody's happy, and that's why there's a market. That's why they're pushing these things, and people are buying them, and that's great. Kate, thank you for doing that. And please, I'm opinionated, and I deliberately make go to the extreme of one of my opinions to just maybe make my point or say something, because I do have very strong opinions on a lot of topics. And if you disagree with me, you're sitting there listening and you're saying, boy, Mike, what's he talking about? What, you know, hey, take the time, fire off an email to me, record a voicemail, and I will put it on. Okay, because I want everybody to hear everything. And that's important. And that's what makes this so great, of having everybody's opinion and contributions. And, you know, Kate, I think that we need a Mike Tech Show great tech debate combo. And I get Steve Cherubino. I invite you on. And you know what? We go laptop versus netbook. And I think Jay, who mentioned it in the chat, I think that's a great idea, and that'd be a lot of fun. And I, you know what? We'd have a lot of downloads for that. So let's see if I can hook that up. I have all these great ideas that sometimes I can't make time for, like the server shows that I want to do. In a comment to that, why I have not done some of those specialty shows, which always work out great for a Saturday. I have been consulting on Saturdays. I have been so busy that I've just had no time for these extra shows. So that's why I'm actually looking forward. I hope we get a foot of snow and I'm snowed in here on Saturday so I can do a show. And hopefully down the road, you know, I was going to say, hopefully I have time, but you know what? I hope I'm always busy with clients. Clients, business, and money comes first over the podcast. Remember that. It is time for music, and this is a long show tonight. Let's get with some of the independent music that I have for tonight, and we start to wrap up. The group is called Blue Remedy, and the song Early Morning. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
Yes. slamming of that door. What's up yesterday?
Remedy and the song Early Morning, and I'm going to have a link to their website on garageband.com. Everybody asks me, Mike, how can I get clients? How can I do consulting? How do I expand my business? Well, the one way, if you want to tackle laptop repairs, the best set of videos that you could ever have to learn how to repair a laptop is Steve Tribino's laptop repair videos. The link is on my website at miketechshow.com. And if you use the code MTS, you get an additional 10% off. And this is a great way in as an icebreaker to get into somebody to say, hey, you know what? I can fix that laptop. And with Steve's instructions, you can learn, and you know, on the initial purchase, when you see how cheap it is, one repair will pay for it. One repair will pay for it. Also, I want to thank everybody for continuing to use my Amazon link. Thank you so very, very much. I really appreciate it. That's it. A little longer show than normal because we had some great stuff to talk about. So I want to thank you for staying subscribed, downloading, and participating like you have in the show. Thank you so very much. And that's it. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.